You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll find out why nurses say that new hospital management models are causing burnout in a new report from Wisconsin Watch. Now we want to hear from you your personal story of how you are being affected, how you have been affected so far by the COVID-19 outbreak, the social distancing, all the things that have cascaded from that. Your personal story, not looking, again, for the political viewpoints, the science, the causes and consequences and possible cures, just your story of what it means to have your kids home from school, to be working from home or not working at all because of all of this. Or a small business owner, love to hear from you and healthcare workers, too. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Tom starts us off in Madison. Tom, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm a sole proprietor because I'm a musician and an actor. I've already lost two productions in theater, and my day job is basically singing to seniors in assisted living and nursing homes. So basically, I'm down to about 2 months' work at this point. And I'm just hoping that when you hear Trump and all these people talking about bailing out industries like the airline industry, I hope someone's talking about bailing out or at least helping out the independent contractor and things like that. And also, I heard your upcoming bumper. We definitely need to support nurses, especially with a union for UW nurses right Tom, here in Madison.
Tom, thank you so much for sharing your story. Good luck to you. I can relate slightly. My band had a show canceled this weekend. We did a live Facebook Live feed. It is different for me. I do not count on my band to make money for good reason. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Daniel is with us in Toma. Daniel, hi.
How you doing? I deliver newspapers, and there's a couple of situations. One, someone says I can't buy newspapers anymore because they might have the virus on it. I think it's kind of exaggeration. But this morning, my question to you guys, Americans are so relaxed. I met a couple. These are older couple. They had to be over 65. They were sitting there getting coffee next to me. They go, well, we just snuck back in the country. We've been out of the country, and I don't know where they came from, but they were enough where they didn't know anything going on. And the world's gone crazy. We had to sneak back in here and come out of Canada because it's an open border up there by Montana and South Dakota. And they says, well, we ain't sick, so why do we care? And they snuck back in here. Now, isn't that the kind of people we should be scared of?
Daniel, thanks for the call. That's what Daniel has heard out delivering newspapers and whatnot. Thanks at 800-642-1234. Looking for your story of how changes because of the COVID-19 outbreak, how it's affecting your daily life. If your kids are at home, off of school, if your sports team has been affected, we'll be talking about that later today as well. 800-642-1234 is the number. John is with us now in Mount Horeb. John, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, so my wife and I have a kind of a unique situation just in lifestyle. We're both self-employed artists. We work full-time creating art. And we sell at art fairs during the summer and usually take the winters to just create production of pottery and sculpture. And, you know, it's great. We can actually thrive in an isolated setting. But when there's all this talk about cancellations of large groups of people, not being able to bring people into our studio for events, things like that really start to have a massive effect on just future possibilities of income, things like that. So we are very fortunate to just be able to go from our, you know, two-person studio back to our house with our kid. But it really is starting to just think about the months to come being our biggest time of you know, income and just what we're going to do in terms of that. So it's a very interesting time. I think there's a lot to be said about social media right now. Instead of using it as a place to spread fear, using it as a place to kind of connect more and actually help out smaller businesses and community-based organizations, things like that.
John, thank you so much for sharing that. Good luck with what might be a difficult season. Ron joins us next in Madison. Ron, hello.
Some weeks I was more clairvoyant. Early this month, I quit working in a hospital. Since then, they've locked me out of the nursing home where my wife must work because of coronavirus. On the computer, I can see the Dow Jones is inching to $3,000 13% down today, even worse than last Thursday. That was the day after Trump's 11-minute speech. Rich Republicans got out of the stock market, and today they're even running faster to get out.
Gotcha, Ron. Thanks for sharing the personal part of your story there. You can join in still at 800-642-1234. Melinda is with us in Appleton. Melinda, hello.
Hello. My daughter works in a major medical center in Detroit and texted me today saying that they don't have face masks for, they don't have adequate masks for their healthcare workers. And one patient exposed 22 healthcare workers that needed to be sent home today as well. And she's got two coworkers that have had the tests that are waiting in occupational health, waiting to know whether they can continue to work or not.
All right, well,
so this is devastating, and the fact that if resources can be made readily available to our healthcare workers to protect them as much as possible.
Melinda, thank you for calling in. Best to your daughter, and thanks to her for working in healthcare at this time. Alex joins us now in Madison. Alex, hello.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Alex?
So I just want to say I work two jobs during the week. One, I work as a medical scribe in an elective surgery clinic, and the other is as a server. And I've lost my job currently as a medical scribe because they're no longer doing elective surgeries at this time. And we're also down to about 50% capacity in the restaurant. So I'm not making nearly as much money this month as I was expected to.
Alex, I'm sorry to hear about that. Good luck to you getting through. I keep saying good luck to everybody. I hope for the best for everybody going through this. Very briefly, Stephanie in Appleton. Stephanie, hi. Oop, I don't think we have a good connection. Stephanie, the message is she's a paramedic, won't be coming back home to her family. I can see that being a difficulty, being exposed. Stephanie, thank you for the work you are doing, though. I really do appreciate that. Hey, if you know somebody who's working as a paramedic, first responder, healthcare, bringing food to people, whatever, make a pledge. We'll have a pledge drive for them. Say, hey, when this is through, I'll get you a dinner or whatever they want, theater, when we can go back out. Good luck, everybody. Thank you for sharing your stories. Stick around. There's more to come here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The sporting world has essentially come to a grinding halt because of the COVID-19 outbreak. We'll get the latest on when play might resume and what's going on in Wisconsin. In the meantime, that's coming up. First, facing budget challenges, hospitals have looked to the manufacturing sector for ideas on how to improve their employees' productivity and efficiency. That's according to a recent Wisconsin Watch report done in collaboration with Wisconsin Public Radio and Madison's Cap Times. The reporters found that implementing what's called a lean staffing model had some negative impact, though, on workload for nurses and raised some concerns about the quality of patient care. Parker Shore is a public affairs reporting fellow for the Cap Times and embedded with Wisconsin Watch. And Bram Sable-Smith is WPR's Mike Simonson Memorial Investigative Reporting Fellow, also with Wisconsin Watch. Parker, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
And Bram, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
Before we get into specific hospitals, this is a story triggered by, it sounds like a trend. Bram, could you tell us about this lean concept as applied to hospitals?
Yeah, so lean, it's a manufacturing model that comes from Toyota. And really, lean is kind of a stand-in for the embracing of the healthcare industry of these kind of manufacturing models that focus on, one, eliminating waste, and two, maximizing productivity. So in the cases of nursing staffing, which is what we're looking at, we're talking about, you know, if we're eliminating waste, maybe that means a nurse with too much downtime. And when we're talking about productivity, it's almost, I kind of think about it like Moneyball in the hospital setting. There's a focus on the productivity of nurses where you can actually calculate, okay, this is how much nursing time we expect we're going to need. This is how much nursing time we actually paid for in a given amount of time. We take the difference, and that's our productivity index. That's a measure of the productivity per unit of service or per patient visit that we're doing. So it's very much the application of a manufacturing model.
Right, from like car factories.
Exactly, from specifically for lean, specifically for Toyota.
Now, Parker, you looked at St. Mary's Hospital, I think, in Madison for the most part. How did this lean concept come into St. Mary's, and what does it look like on the hospital floor?
Well, nurses said that have been there a while when Sister Mary Jean, I think was her name, was walking the floor as a former CEO. They never heard anything about productivity. That wasn't a word really in the hospital's vocabulary. And then over the past maybe 10 years, but more recently in the past few years, these consultants have been brought in, and they brought with them a lot of focus on productivity. Among hospital executives, it's the most targeted goal to reduce the financial strains of their hospitals. So it's really in vogue right now is increasing productivity, specifically on labor.
And yeah, from the hospital perspective, labor is a big cost that they're trying to get control over, among some other costs, but labor is a big one, right? Is that the concept here?
Right. Labor can account for 40%, 50%, even more of a hospital's total expenditure. So it's a big target for hospitals to reduce their expenses, for sure.
And nurses feel the pinch of that specifically because they tend to be the largest line item for labor in a given hospital.
And then you looked at a different hospital in particular, Bram, UW Health, also in Madison. How did lean make its way in there?
So UW Health nurses, they've been in the news quite a lot lately. You've talked about your show. Mm-hmm. They're trying to organize a union, and one of the main things that they're talking about is a similar concern to what St. Mary's nurses have about staffing levels. So just like at St. Mary's, UW Health has its own productivity tool where they're mapping out and tracking the productivity of a given unit. And that productivity measurement goes into decisions about, you know, how many nurses are on staff at, you know, at any given time within a unit. If the tool says there might be too many nurses there, a nurse might get sent home. But it also has to do with if, you know, a nurse retires or leaves for some reason, productivity can factor into whether that position will then be refilled later on.
Now, let's find out what this looks like from the perspective of the nurse and the patients that he or she deals with. What does this mean for, if I'm a nurse, how many patients I might be working with, how much time I spend with them? What did you see, Parker?
Well, nurses at St. Mary's are definitely under a lot of strain. They say they're very burned out. They go home. They can barely even eat. They have way too many patients, they say, and especially inexperienced nurses who are the ones that fill in for the veteran nurses who are really the backbone of providing a lot of guidance and just expertise that you can't learn in school, the stuff that comes from years of experience. They're leaving because of these benefit changes, and the people filling those positions are often inexperienced nurses. And they are tasked with having just as many patients as the experienced nurses, and they say that's a dangerous situation to be in. We heard of an anecdote about an inexperienced nurse having to take care of 6 patients overnight, and then this experienced nurse comes in the morning to take over her patients. And it turned out two of the patients had strokes overnight, and that had gone unnoticed. So a lot of this, the impact on patient care might not show up in data. We looked at Wisconsin Hospital Association data, and we didn't see any clear trends of increase in falls, for instance, which is a sign of short staffing. But talking with nurses, they say these conditions are getting worse, they're becoming more dangerous, and a lot of them had anecdotes to show how having more patients leads to more medical errors and leads to some adverse events.
Did you hear similar concerns at UW Health, Bram?
Yeah, that's right. And in terms of the actually seeing the trends changing in the hospital data, when we're speaking to experts on these things, they're saying it's unlikely you're going to see these kinds of changes at a given hospital over a short period of time. But when you take the large data, when you take a large view of multiple hospitals over a long period of time, the trend is very clear.
You focused on a couple of Madison hospitals. This is not just a Madison hospital story, right, Parker? This is something going on all over the country?
Right. There's strikes that have happened or are currently happening in a half dozen states in the past year alone over short staffing and the nurses and other staff feeling that the conditions are unsafe. A recent study showed that 70% of hospitals in the nation have adopted lean or some other form of efficiency optimizing sort of manufacturing model. A very much smaller percentage of those have maturely or widely implemented these models. But lean has really, you know, is in the vast majority of hospitals in the nation.
Talking to Parker Shore and Bram Sable-Smith about the reporting for Wisconsin Watch on the lean model. Cutting labor costs at hospitals, the impact that can have on the job of the nurse and maybe the health of the patient. Bram, you, as part of this piece, talked to some experts who are, in some cases, advocates for the lean approach and the productivity numbers, who said, yeah, but if you use them right, and they say hospitals may be using them wrong. What kind of things did you hear?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, lean in and of itself is not, it's not a bad thing. And it has had a lot of, you know, significantly good impacts in the healthcare industry. Hospitals around the country have used lean to reduce the amount of time that patients are waiting to get into the ER, for example. They've used it to have a more efficient, intuitive process for, you know, stocking supplies. So lean in and of itself, it's something that people really are advocating for. And you can kind of understand why it's taken off in hospitals around the country. But, you know, when you focus on one specific part of it, this is what the lean advocates are saying. If there's an overemphasis on something like productivity, you know, at the expense of this overall approach, that can lead to this kind of labor tensions that we're talking about.
And Parker, some hospital departments don't know when their patients are coming. A delivery ward, for example, can't predict if 0, 1, or 5 women are going to show up to deliver. Is that a concern you heard raised?
Right. So a lot of these staffing levels are maybe fine in ideal circumstances, or if the, you know, the their models are correctly, and, you know, the amount of patients that the model thinks are going to come, and maybe then you have enough nurses at least, so it's not dangerous. But if there's an influx, like a bunch of mothers in labor suddenly showing up in a department, that might throw a wrench in things and really impact patient safety. So we heard an anecdote from two nurses in a recent hectic weekend in the labor and delivery unit, where a woman was in labor and she was calling out for pain medication for an hour alone as her nurse was tending to another emergency. And we heard in other units where suddenly a nurse will have two highly acute patients, so people with serious medical challenges. And that would happen in the past, but in the past you had more nurses that could help on that. Now there's not a lot of wiggle room or flexibility to help out when sudden things happen, like they often do in hospitals.
Bram, were you able to get a response from UW Health about these kind of concerns being raised?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at UW Health, they said this all started in 2017 with an initiative to save $80 million over the course of 18 months. UW Health exceeded that. They saved over $100 million. And a spokesperson said that their staffing is back to pre-2017 levels, that there's kind of some unique financial conditions in 2017 that were leading to the necessity for that kind of cost saving that included labor cuts. So they say that staffing is back to pre-2017 levels, but nurses say that these kind of staffing issues persist even with that.
And Parker, how about St. Mary's?
St. Mary's didn't really want to talk a ton for this article. They did say that they meet patient need across all units, across all ministries. They didn't really go into specifics about their procedures that ensure this. Their response was minimal.
And Bram, you were out in the field, I think, reporting this before COVID-19 became such a big news story. Was there anything, any indication about how this maybe lack of slack in hospital capacity could impact the response to a sudden influx, a pandemic?
So this is an area we're reporting on right now, talking to nurses, going back, talking to some of our previous sources, talking to news sources about that. And it's absolutely on their mind. I think the way you described it, the lack of slack, really is, that's the big concern. That's what we're talking about, is kind of a rigidity, an inflexibility to respond to these kinds of influx events. At UW Health, you know, we're talking to nurses who, just in the past few years, they've started getting these pages, these text messages from unit managers pleading for extra help. You know, we need a sixth nurse right now. Could that be you? Hey, we can buy you pizza, things like that. These kind of desperate messages asking for more staff. And that's within like the normal churn of circumstances. So as one nurse put it to me, this kind of staffing austerity and the pandemic together are not a good fit. And it's something that's on people's minds. Absolutely.
We'll watch for your future reporting on this. Bram, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
And Parker, thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you.
That was Parker Shore, public affairs reporting fellow for the Cap Times, who is embedded with the Wisconsin Watch, and Bram Sable-Smith, the WPR Mike Simonson Memorial Investigative Reporting Fellow, also with Wisconsin Watch. You can read more of their reporting on staffing at hospitals at wisconsinwatch.org. Coming up, we'll get an update on how the COVID-19 outbreak is affecting sporting events in Wisconsin and beyond. That's up next here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a bipartisan commission says the United States needs to do more to bulk up its cyber defenses. We'll talk with the co-chairs of that group about their recommendations. First, if we were living in normal times, many of us would be filling out our March Madness college basketball brackets. We would have found out yesterday, I think, who Wisconsin's teams would be playing and getting excited about that. But these aren't normal times. The NCAA canceled the men's and women's tournaments because of the COVID-19 outbreak. The Boys and Girls State High School basketball tournaments were also called off. And those hoping this would be the year for the Milwaukee Bucks to finally end their near 50-year NBA championship drought, COVID-19 is putting those dreams on hold as well. The virus is also pushing back the Milwaukee Brewers home opener and suspending play in the National Hockey League, professional golf, and other sports organizations. Megan Hart is Wisconsin Public Radio sports reporter. Megan, good to have you with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Megan, it's got to be a weird time to be a sports reporter right now.
Yeah, it certainly does. Thursday, I would say last Thursday, was an incredibly hectic day, just covering all of these changes. I think for a while it looked like, you know, we might have some sports taking place without fans in attendance, but it just really has, things have just changed so dramatically in the last week. And now I'm on the sports and COVID-19 beat, that's for sure.
Now, the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association, WIAA, they govern most high school sports in the state. As you mentioned, as of last Thursday, it looked like they were going to try to have the tournament still, but just a limited number of people in the audience. What led them ultimately to just cancel the tournaments altogether?
I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, all of the uncertainty that we're facing. There's a lot of different guidelines, they said, coming at them from public health organizations that they were following. You know, I went to a press conference they held Thursday to talk about the changes they made as far as limiting fans. And, you know, they said that it's really kind of, they're making these decisions in real time as far as what the right thing to do is. And I guess it just got to a point where they didn't feel like it was safe to continue the girls basketball tournament at all. They had started that on Thursday and then they discontinued it Friday. And the boys tournament was supposed to be this weekend. And they've canceled that as well.
And that's not a decision I imagine they would take lightly. This is something they really don't want to do unless they absolutely have to. Did you get an impression of kind of the enormity of their thinking on this?
Yeah, I will say that their executive director, Dave Anderson, at the press conference, you could tell that he was really wrestling with the decision that, like so many people in the sports world, he really felt for especially seniors and their coaches after they've, you know, been training for years for some of these state tournaments. So it was definitely not a decision that they made lightly, but it seems to be that they kind of fell into step with the rest of what the sports world is doing as far as suspending or canceling competition.
Have you gotten a sense of the reactions out there in the high school sports world since they made that decision?
I think, you know, a lot of people are disappointed at the situation, but as from what I can tell, people I've spoken to seem to understand the reasoning. They understood why it was canceled. One thing that the executive director of WIA did say at that press conference is that he kind of regretted that it all had to be decided so abruptly because mm-hmm. he knew Thursday morning there were fans that had already driven into Green Bay for the girls tournament that weren't going to be able to attend the games. And then they ultimately ended up being canceled. But I think, you know, people have to be understanding with everything that's going on right now.
Before we move on from the high school level, spring sports, I know, having young athletes in my own household, they're getting ready to have tryouts for some of the teams. What are you watching for to see if seasons start, when seasons start, if they happen at all?
Well, WIA did send out a press release yesterday saying that spring sports seasons are suspended until further notice. I know a lot of you know, little leagues and youth sports are also on hold at the moment. So it's really hard. You know, it's I'm sure if you ask me again tomorrow, mm-hmm. I'll have something different to tell you. So just we're just following it as closely as we can.
Talking to Megan Hart, Wisconsin Public Radio sports reporter, about the widespread closings and ends of seasons, or at least postponements of seasons, because of the COVID-19 virus. Let's move up to the college level. No NCAA tournaments, men's or women. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's so many people are looking forward to March Madness this time of year. I know that I'm based in Green Bay, but we did have some reporters go out and talk to students last week, and a lot of them brought up sports and said how, you know, that was one of kind of the big disappointments, is that they're not going to get to watch Wisconsin men's basketball, which has had a really good run recently. Same with Wisconsin women's hockey, was also in the midst of the NCAA tournament. So, you know, it's I think, again, you know, people, a lot of people are sad about it. But again, I think that the general feeling in the sports world is that this is the right thing to do.
Right. Can you talk about the economic impact? We can roll professional sports into this as well. Obviously, there are a lot of other big economic problems going on, but these are even the high school tournaments for Madison and Green Bay. They're big deals. The pro teams, the NCAA. This is a big economic hit, isn't it?
It is huge. Yeah. I mean, you're right, at every single level. I think, of course, one of the big things that that everyone is looking at right now is whether or not the Olympics are going to be able to go forward. The president of the International Olympic Committee last week, he encouraged athletes to continue preparation with great confidence and full steam. But in Tokyo spent an estimated $26 billion preparing for these Olympics. So just that alone will have huge economic impacts if that's canceled all over the world. I know, a lot of, I think one of the kind of bright spots recently has been athletes stepping up and making donations to arena workers, which the Bucks, everyone on the Milwaukee Bucks roster did that, and the team actually chose to match that. So there is a fund to help pay workers at the Fiserv Forum, hourly workers who won't be able to work during this NBA suspension. I know J.J. Watt is a former Badger and a football player from Wisconsin. He and his wife have donated $350,000 to provide meals to people in Houston, where he plays for the Houston Texans. But a lot of people are impacted by this, of course, in the sports world and outside of it.
Now, the Bucks, you mentioned, they've had this fantastic season. They've been the biggest story in Wisconsin sports over the last couple of months. What do we know about whether play could resume in the NBA? What are they looking at there?
Yeah, at the point where the season was suspended, the Bucks were leading the NBA. They are, there's still a lot of questions, but the NBA has been looking at arena availability through August, indicating, that they want to continue the season, but it's unlikely to happen anytime soon. Of course, the CDC issued guidelines last night advising that all events with over 50 people be canceled through the middle of May. So it would likely not resume before then. And there's a lot of challenges because, of course, these NBA arenas often host concerts or NHL teams or all different kinds of events. So that makes scheduling challenging. But I know that that they're optimistic that they can continue the season.
And finally, baseball made some of the newest news. So what are they looking at now for pushing back opening day?
Yeah, that one really breaks my heart. So last week, they did decide to suspend spring training, and they said that the season would be delayed by at least 2 weeks. But today, Major League Baseball, the owners and the commissioner made an announcement that they are pushing back the opening day. Again, they didn't give a timeline. They did say that they're committed to playing as many games as possible this season, and they said that they would keep fans up to date as the schedule sort of comes together moving forward. They will need about a month of preparation because spring training is on hold, so it will take a while before the season can start.
And briefly, Megan, what are you watching for next? Are there any other shoes you're waiting to drop when it comes to sports and COVID-19?
I think that the Olympics is a big thing. The Ryder Cup is scheduled to take place in Wisconsin in September, and that will have a huge economic impact on the state. So I think we're kind of waiting to see what will happen with that. But for sports fans who, it's not quite as satisfying probably as watching live sports. NFL free agency started today. So the Packers have closed operations for 2 weeks at Lambeau Field, but they are already at work kind of putting together next year's team. And the NFL draft is still going to take place in April without fans in attendance. But at least that'll give sports fans something to talk about.
Megan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Megan Hart is Wisconsin Public Radio sports reporter. We talked with her about how the COVID-19 outbreak has been affecting sporting events in Wisconsin. basically canceling all of them. Some seasons shut down, others postponed. The NBA, Major League Baseball, and NHL are saying their seasons may resume, but only time will tell. High school and college basketball appear to be done for the season. Let us know how this affects you. Email us, ideas@WPR.org. We're talking a lot about the COVID-19 illness here on the Ideas Network, and we're going to keep on doing that, but we're also going to take some breaks and talk about other things, hopefully, that are fun and interesting along the way. We have a couple good ones lined up for you tomorrow. Let's start tomorrow at 6 on the morning show. Kate Archer-Kent and her guest are going to talk about dinosaurs. I know, you know, we like talking about science here on the Ideas Network, and I know You, at least when we hear from you, you like to hear science stories too. Well, dinosaurs, we're going to hear about things we're learning from dinosaur eggshells that are fossilized from 75 million years ago. Kate gave me some of the inside scoop on this one. Turns out we can learn a lot from these eggshells, including why many dinosaurs, this is kind of blowing my mind, may have been warm-blooded. I thought reptiles, cold-blooded, right? No, a lot of them are warm-blooded, apparently. Some of them grew feathers, that I'd heard. And this could give us insight on how birds evolved from dinosaurs. So check that out on the morning show. Nice change of pace, hearing about early dinosaur prehistory. Then on the Larry Miller show, get some info on filing your taxes. Okay, maybe that's not as fun as dinosaurs, but it sounds pretty useful. And hey, on Central Time, we're going to bring you some fun stuff amid the serious stuff as well. Let us know what you want to hear about. Tweet us at Central Time WPR. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.